This podcast is supported by Australian Ethical. Australian Ethical grow your retirement savings without sacrificing integrity for performance, so you can build a better future for yourself and our world. Because when your super prospers, we all thrive. Please read the FSG, PDS and TMD on the website to consider if the product is right for you and the ethical guide to understand how they invest. Issued by Australian Ethical Superannuation Proprietary Limited, AFSL 526055.
Good morning, Lenore.
Morning, Brady.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi, Brady.
And good morning, Joe.
Hi, Brady.
Pauline Hanson has dominated headlines this week after wearing a burqa into the Senate on Monday. She's now been suspended for 7 days. The last time that happened was 1979. I think we are fairly safe in calling this a stunt. Lenore, do you think she got what she wanted out of this?
Oh, absolutely she did. I mean, Pauline Hanson is the stunt queen. She's been doing stunts for 3 decades now. And this was obviously never about changing anything. I mean, if she was really on about banning the burqa, there's many other ways she could have used parliamentary procedure. This was really about gaining attention, and to that extent it worked. It was offensive and disrespectful to play dress up in, you know, the garb of some of another religion. And then there was the sequel, Cooking Steak with Barnaby, in the sort of endless political wooing of Barnaby Joyce. But yeah, it was vintage Hanson. I mean, remember that video in 1997 when she was still very much alive and she said, you know, if you're seeing this now, I've been murdered. I mean, this is what she does to get attention. And I think it provides the perfect case study both for other political parties and for the media when we're thinking about how we deal with these stunts, how we report on them when we kind of have to, because she's got 4 senators. It was a big kerfuffle. It held up the whole Senate. One Nation is somewhere between 12 and 18% in the polls. I think we're past the point where we can ignore her, but it raises questions about, you know, how much import should we give it? How much coverage should we give it? How do we report on it without inflaming or really propagating her views? And I think it raises questions for political parties as well. So yes, she got what she wanted and we need to think.
Yeah, so I think the key word that Lenore just used there was attention. She wants attention. This is a kind of Australian, very much smaller, thankfully, version of the huge, you know, the last 10 or more years in America where attention has become the big...
It's become the metric
of politics, basically, and Trump is the master of gathering attention, and the, like, just gaining attention is a key thing that politicians have to do to succeed.
And not worrying whether it's positive or negative attention.
Exactly. Negative attention is just as good as positive attention. It doesn't work for everyone, but it really has worked for Trump. And this is what Hanson and others like her hope to replicate in Australia. It's much harder here for reasons we've discussed a lot on the pod.
And it hasn't worked for her in the past necessarily. I mean, she's still there, but she's not Nigel Farage.
Yeah. And there's no reason, well, will remains to be seen whether it'll work, but it's like repeating. She hasn't got a new idea, right?
Yeah, it's actually an old stunt.
So whether repeating that same stunt, we don't know. But that's what she's trying to do. And yeah, I actually thought that the barbecue worked better for her because...
You mean the sandwich press?
The sandwich press, because everyone, then that spins off into stories like, whoa, that's a weird way to cook a steak on a sandwich press. Let's get our culinary correspondent to write about that. You know, it's like that just spins off into more coverage and it's obviously completely beside the point politically.
Yeah, I would note that we did discuss here at The Guardian doing a story about cooking on a sandwich press that morning. It was an obvious kind of angle to follow and we decided not to do that because we thought it would trivialise what was an incredibly grave and ugly couple of days in Parliament, not only Pauline's stunt, but also then the comments Ralph Babbitt, another senator, made afterwards, made some really hateful, concerning comments about Islam that he was very happy to then repeat outside the chamber. Just going back to what Lenore said, like, yeah, I think there is a really kind of fraught question for the media about how we cover Pauline Hanson, how much prominence we give her. Like, on the one hand, she does thrive on attention. She does this for attention. That is kind of her currency. On the other hand, I think you've got to be careful not to be wholly dismissive of it either and say she's a total fringe player and this doesn't matter. She doesn't represent Australia. Like, she doesn't represent the majority of Australians, but she does represent a disturbingly small, active cohort of Australians. And we know that anti-immigration sentiment is rising in Australia. The latest Scanlon Cohesion report confirmed that concerns post-COVID have shown an uptick in belief that the number of migrants coming to Australia is too high, and that the actual Australian sentiment towards Muslims has become more and more negative over the last couple of years. That is kind of a issue that has been building in the electorate, which I was quite disturbed to see the stats, again, from the latest Scanlon report showing that. And I think that's the people she is appealing to with stunts like this. That is the sentiment she is driving. And that has real world effects for Muslims. Like, we keep hearing from the Muslim community that particularly Muslim women, because they're so visibly Muslim, often are targeted on the streets. We know there's a lot of anti-Palestinian racism in Australia. Like, this is a real issue. So I think there's a very hard line between dismissing it as total nonsense and seeing it as a sort of evidence of a really ugly side of this country that we do need to deal with and report on and interrogate.
Absolutely. And I mean, we need to bear in mind that if she is at 18% of the primary vote, that's only 6 points behind the coalition. Mm. Now, I mean, they're imploding also because of the same sorts of issues. And I think the other thing that stunts like this do is give sections of the media like Sky After Dark a kind of entry point. And as well as anti-Muslim sentiment, I think we are seeing an uptick in general anti-immigration sentiment. Mm. And when Pauline Hanson's stunt was being discussed on Sky After Dark, for example, they used it to segue directly into a debate about migration and their view that migration is too high. And then I saw some of them talking about, and we need to talk about the type of people we are letting in, and then segue into a sort of positive discussion of her ideas. And I think as that goes on, it starts to normalize the ideas. So I think, you know, that the effect is broader and possibly more insidious than just it's a stunt and do we report on it or not. It's the way it kind of shifts the debate or the focus of the debate.
And so what's the Guardian's role in that? What are the considerations happening in the newsroom when you know that these are the insidious consequences of a photo like that going everywhere for a few days?
I mean, it's very difficult, but I think, you know, we have to report on it. We don't have to give long dissertations on her actual views, because I don't, as I said at the outset, I don't think she was serious about banning the burqa or having a discussion about that, or, you know, various arguments she made about national security and the like. We don't have to give that credence, but we do have to sort of report on it. And we just have to think about how we balance these things. And we have to report on the impact that it has, as Joe says, on sections of the community that are particularly targeted by her views.
Mm. Yeah, like, I think there's fairly clear lines around interviewing members of the fringe far right in Australia. And, you know, we tend to not interview those people at Guardian Australia because we don't want to platform them. However, when you're talking about extreme views in the parliament, it's much harder to ignore. You can't say we're never going to cover the antics of politicians in parliament. However, you know, as Lenore said, we can be careful about how much prominence we give them, how much airtime we give them. You know, it's a constant work in progress, but it's what is proportionate, what is in the public interest. Can we fact check them? Like, I recall when Pauline Hanson gave her speech at Mar-a-Lago recently, some media outlets wrote that up in a fairly uncritical way, I have to say, where she was making pretty wild claims about migration and native title. And, you know, we wanted to cover that because we thought the fact that she was skipping parliament to speak at this luxury billionaires club in Florida was an important story, but we spent a bit more time fact checking some of the claims and inserting some of that context in the story. So it wasn't a pure sort of PR exercise.
And it was
for her.
A sort of fact sandwich. Like, you don't fact check it after the event, you fact check in the story originally.
Yeah. It's like the debate about how you respond to trolls on the internet. In fact, it is the same thing. It is trolling. It's political trolling. And the fact that it takes place in parliament and not on social media is almost immaterial, because it's looking to provoke exactly the same response. And it's like if you retweet something in the old days, but like with a fact check on top of it, all you're doing in some people's arguments is you're just feeding the algorithm. You're promoting the views that you disagree with, in fact, by spreading them. And that's the same dilemma that we have in reporting on a thing like this in Parliament or outside Parliament. Come to that.
There's not an answer
there's
to this
not a
question.
Good answer.
And it's a call that's made almost daily.
Yep.
Do you think this raises a dilemma for the coalition?
Holy hell, yeah. I mean, they are heading in sort of Pauline Hanson adjacent ways on many policy areas like net zero and like migration. But as people in the Labor Party and elsewhere say, you can't out Hanson Hanson. And so in this instance, they did vote to censure Hanson, which then allowed her to set up petitions differentiating herself, appealing to right-wing voters, differentiating herself from them. So they're also in a really tricky position. And then they're on Sky News After Dark being attacked for censuring her and for not supporting her. I remember a National Party senator back in the days when Pauline Hanson first came into Parliament, Ron Boswell, who really took a stand against appeasing Pauline Hanson. And he was saying that, you know, all you do by legitimising her is legitimising people voting for her, making it safe for people to vote for her. And he said, if we don't fight back, that's where we'll end up. We'll be dragged way to the right. And his re-election in 2001 was basically a head-to-head contest for the sixth spot against Pauline Hanson. And he won. And in his valedictory speech, he said that he'd risked everything to stand up against her aggressive, narrow view of Australia. Defeating Pauline Hanson and One Nation in 2001 has been my greatest political achievement. I just don't think there are too many Ron Boswells left in the National Party.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, Matt Canavan did come out fairly strongly.
He did.
Come out strongly against what she did this time. But yeah, I mean, the coalition does have an option, which is to stand on their principles, which, to be fair to John Howard, is pretty much what he did Hanson first time around.
I do wonder though if the coalition wouldn't have been a bit happy to see Hanson stunt this week. Like, if you look at the polls, it's clear that the rise in the One Nation vote is happening at the expense of the coalition. It's not happening kind of across the board. It's not Labor voters defecting, it's coalition voters, right? And that has not happened because One Nation has been doing anything particularly vocal. They haven't been putting forward any new policies since the last election. They've just kind of been there as a reservoir for the disaffected right-wing vote. I think sometimes the more people see of Hanson, the less they might like her. Like, some people who might find her, who might move from the coalition to One Nation because they have strong views about immigration or whatever, but they're not quite the full One Nation, might be put off by stunts like this. And maybe Pauline Hanson reminding those swinging voters who she is could maybe be play to the coalition's advantage as the more sort of less embarrassing kind of place to park your vote if you're on the right. I don't know. That's just a theory, but I think there is a world where that is true.
But an alternative theory is that they've moved so far to the right now that if she goes out further than them on the right, she keeps peeling votes on the right, and they're too far to the right to get votes back on the left. So they've kind of gone too far out on the limb to have that happen. I don't know.
Yeah.
Pauline's certainly not the first politician in the Australian Parliament to do a stunt. Do you think they can ever be effective in garnering attention for policies that aren't getting enough attention, or are they always just a distraction?
No, I mean, sure they can. I mean, I've never been a huge fan of this stunt, but there are stunts that are not offensive in the way that this one was. I mean, Nick Xenophon, the former senator, did so many stunts. He made a whole calendar out of them because he had one for every month of the year. I remember Steve Fielding dressed up as a bottle. I don't really remember why. And Bob Catter and Andrew Wilkie dress up as pigs. I'm not sure why.
Supermarket pricing.
There are a lot of stunts, and a lot of them are, you know, ways to draw attention to something and are not offensive like this one.
I think in a way, we should be trying to think about this. I mean, I think Pauline Hanson is sort of not, she's still thinking in slightly old ways about stunts herself, but I think we should be thinking about them more nowadays in terms of just different ways that politicians are trying to connect with a disengaged audience. Attempts we saw in the last election to connect with influencers and podcast hosts and stuff, than the sort of Xenophon Fielding dressing up in Parliament, even though it was literally dressing up in Parliament.
Yeah, the only other thing I'd add, I guess, is that Parliament, I think, is a hard sell to audiences, particularly on commercial TV. Like, it is not visually very exciting to cover politics. Doing stunts like this is appealing for politicians, particularly those kind of on the crossbench who might not be getting attention otherwise. It is a way they can provide that kind of colour and movement and razzle dazzle and get on the TV news. That's kind of as simple as it is, I think.
And it's not just politicians who are trying to garner attention in this fragmented media landscape. There's been a lot of headlines lately about neo-Nazis. Do you think that their protests in Victoria and in Sydney fall within the category of stunts?
There's certainly attention-seeking opportunities, yeah. I mean, when 60 members of the neo-Nazi National Socialist Network stood in formation outside of Macquarie Street with a very offensive banner, they were there for the pictures and the news coverage, and again, they succeeded. So I think it's quite similar, and it presents similar dilemmas, probably even more dilemmas for the media than a political stunt.
And it's interesting the choices the media as a whole has made about covering these stunts. Like, this is not the first time the NSN had stood up outside Parliament in New South Wales. The last time did not receive much media coverage. They've pulled other stunts in regional New South Wales, which have received really minimal coverage. But I think once one media outlet gives a lot of prominence to it, others tend to follow, and then it tends to become a huge story. And
politicians took this one up.
That's true. Yeah, I think it presents a really fraught question for the media as to whether we cover these events. There are other events that we have chosen not to cover before. Sometimes they break through and it's hard to ignore them. But, you know, we should know that when we do cover these events, the NSN is pretty happy with that coverage. Mm.
I thought it was interesting that 9 papers took the decision to identify some of the NSN members who were standing there without any face coverings or, you know, like easily identifiable. And, you know, I think that's a really interesting call, and we discussed it in the newsroom. And actually, at the end of the day, I think it probably was a reasonable call because it demystifies them. They're not, you know, an amorphous, scary group of men in dark suits. They're a postie and a, you know, a bloke who's working in an IT firm that, you know, takes the mystique out of it. But that is, again, a really tricky judgment call.
Mm. I think one thing to think about as a news editor or a journalist anytime these stories come up is, like, would the NSN be happy with this story? Is this the way they would want this event covered? They want it to be covered as if they're kind of a scary group of powerful, you know, Hitler fanatics. That's their whole bag. But the fact that they're just a group of guys, that they hold fairly regular jobs, that one of them is now potentially facing deportation, is detained in Villawood, that's not the kind of coverage and outcome I think that they were expecting or that they wanted.
Do you think there's enough resistance in the media and in the community in general, or are some of these fringe views beginning to be normalised?
Well, as I said, I think they are beginning to be normalised, and I think that's part of a global trend. And as we know, you know, we're interconnected digitally. And so if, you know, the Farage party is, you know, really booming in the UK, you know, Trump's migration views in the US, people here with those same views take heart. There's a spectrum of views. Not everybody who maybe feels like the immigration intake is a bit high is far right or a supporter of Pauline Hanson. But there's a sentiment there that can be harvested, I guess, by those on the right. And I think we're going to see a real uptick in this. I mean, there's petitions at the moment to set up a Farage-style reform party in Australia, and then that will be in the political debate leading up to the next election. I think the coalition is moving in that direction, and so that normalises the debate. So I think these considerations, how do we reflect what the views of the population are, and then when is it getting to a point where we really have to bear these sorts of questions in mind? I think that's going to be an ongoing question for us.
And it's a sort of requires sort of facts and figures and graphs.
Yeah, like net zero is the same.
Nuance, yeah. And, you know, on the one hand, a bit of this and a bit of that. It's a much, it's quite a complicated issue, and it's a really difficult case to make. It falls apart in the face of a really powerful image or an effective anti-migration slogan. Feels like it just burst through those carefully made, you know, thought through arguments.
Yeah, I mean, I think the media needs to think very carefully about our role in opening that Overton window. Like, I would take us back to Anzac Day this year when there was a stunt by far right figures in Australia at a Welcome to Country at a dawn service where they yelled out and booed. It was really disgraceful, hurtful behaviour. But is what kicked off a renewed debate about should the Welcome to Country, you know, be banned at certain events, you know? And I just thought that was extraordinary. It's one thing for politicians to sort of condemn neo-Nazis, but if you're picking up talking points and running with them, and if the media is actively doing that, we have to be really honest about our role here.
Next, laws for nature, vaccine success, and falling off a cliff.